This evening, we're going to read from a collection of stories that were told by Srila Prabhupada on different occasions. It's a very lengthy file, and some of these stories I had not seen before. So we can't go through all of them, obviously, but I've selected the ones which I consider to be, for myself, most interesting. Mainly the new ones. Some old ones, too. So, without further ado, we can start. So the first story is entitled, Close the Door. An employer advertised for an opening in his firm and received many applications. Based upon these, he selected two men and asked them to come for an interview. The employer then observed each man carefully during the interview. When the first man entered the room, he left the door open behind him. The employer spoke with him for about 15 minutes and then asked him to wait outside. When the second applicant entered, he shut the door behind him. After speaking with him, the employer asked him to also wait outside and then called his secretary. "That first man I spoke to," he said, "has all the qualifications, but I have decided to give the job to the second man." "Why is that?" "Because the first man left the door open. It appears he is a lazy fellow. The other man shut the door, so while he may not be so qualified, he will learn quickly." Moral: even though one may be so-called qualified, if he is not trained in simple etiquettes, like closing the door, what is the use of his learning? This is very instructive, especially for ISKCON devotees, because it seems they often lack these basic etiquettes in life. They don't close the door, and they also like to have all their meetings in doorways. Ever noticed that? Sometimes I think we should actually label some doorways somebody's office, because that's where he has all his meetings. Now, here's another story called Increasing the Fever. There was once a doctor visiting a house to diagnose two patients, a rich housewife and her maidservant. The doctor said, "The maidservant's fever is 105. Now, this is in Fahrenheit. So, in Fahrenheit scale, the normal temperature is 98.6, normal body temperature. So 105 is high. The doctor said, "This maidservant's fever is 105, so there is some anxiety. I will give her some medicine. But the landlady of the house has practically no fever, 99, so there is no anxiety for her." But when the landlady heard this, she became angry and said, "This doctor is useless. I am the landlady. I've got only 99, and my maidservant has 105. The maidservant should have 98, and I should have 110. So the moral is, the modern civilization is inclined to increase the degree of its fever up to 110. As in the human body, there is death as soon as the temperature reaches 107. So, by the nuclear weapons, modern civilization will come to the point of 107 and over. But devotees want to decrease the fever by living the highest ideal life and decreasing the demands of the body. So this increase of fever refers to increasing all the unnecessary paraphernalia of sense gratification. People are working so hard to accumulate more and more useless things, just to enjoy their senses in an animalistic way. So the whole society is aimed at that. They think this is progress. So this story very nicely illustrates that that type of progress simply leads to death. Now this is a very often quoted story. The next one is called The Missionary and the Coal Miners. This is a story Srila Prabhupada told many times. But I think that many of you haven't heard this story before. Am I right? The missionary and the coal miners? Have you heard it? Ramananda Roy, you've heard it. Yes. All right. So because so many have not heard it, I will read it. Once there was a Christian minister who was preaching to the coal miners. You know, the men who dig for coal in the mountainside. The missionary began a very fired up lecture, telling the miners that a sinful person will have to go to hell, and he can only be saved if he surrenders to Jesus Christ. On hearing the name of Jesus Christ, one of the miners asked, "What is his number?" Because all of the coal miners, they have a number. So these miners were so ignorant, they'd never heard of Jesus before. So when the minister was saying, "Only Jesus can save you," one man said, "What is his number?" So then the missionary, he tried again. He thought, "Well, I have to preach to them from a different direction." So then he began to describe the misery of hell. He said, "Hell is a very dark hole that goes deep under the earth. And it's very dirty down there." So the miners, they looked at each other and they looked at the minister. They shrugged their shoulders. "What's wrong with hell? We're working there every day." So then, this minister, he could understand that he was preaching to people whose conception of reality was very, very narrow. He couldn't give, the examples he were giving, they couldn't understand. So then he thought a little more, and then he said, "In hell, there are no newspapers." And the miners went, "Oh, no." They were very afraid. "We don't want to go to hell. Tell us more about Jesus." So the moral is that we have to preach according to Kala Desha Patra. That means according to time, place, and circumstance. We have to find out what level of consciousness the people we're speaking to is on and try to make Krishna consciousness relevant to that level. If it is too high or also too low, they'll not be attracted. And now, here's a story about the lazy men. This is also an often told story, but devotees appreciate it very much, so we'll read it today. Only a lazy man cannot cook. This is the point that Prabhupada wanted to make with this story. Only a lazy man cannot cook, because cooking, what follows cooking? Eating. So everybody likes to eat. This is the point. Nobody's too lazy to eat. But sometimes we're lazy. We want others to cook for us. So there's a story. There was a king who announced that all lazy men in his kingdom could come to the charity house and be fed. So hundreds of people came, and they all said, "I'm a lazy man." You see, the king, he wanted to... The background of the story, because there's a little background, is that the king was having a discussion with his minister. And they were talking about this, who is really lazy? And the minister was saying, "Well, Your Majesty, from what I have seen, there are very few people who are actually really lazy. There are many people who say they are lazy, but when it's in their own interest, they can become very active, and then you see they're not really lazy." So this whole arrangement was just to see who is really lazy. So it was announced, all lazy men can come to the charity house and have a big feast. So many, many people, "I am lazy, I am lazy, I am lazy." Everyone was introducing themselves in that way. So then the king told the minister to set fire to the charity house while they were all sitting and eating, you see. And then suddenly the minister set fire. It was a wooden house. So then all these lazy people became very active to save their lives. They were all running, jumping out the windows. Then after everyone had left, the king looked in and he saw two men. By this time, the whole place was burning. And there were two men who were sitting in the middle, fire all around them. And they were still eating very slowly, like this. And the king was watching, and he saw one of the men turn to the other and say, "My back is becoming very hot from the fire." The other one said, "Just turn your other side." So, from this the king could understand that here are two really lazy men. Oh, man. Now this is another story often told by Srila Prabhupada, scissor philosophy. This is to illustrate stubbornness. When someone is so stubborn, he won't give up his point of view. So two men were having an argument about, they wanted to cut something. And they were arguing about which is the best tool to use to cut. So one was saying, knife. For this thing, a knife is better. And the other was saying, no, scissors. So back and forth, one was saying, knife. And the other was, scissors, knife, scissors. And it became a very hot argument. Then finally, the one who was advocating knife, he said, "If you don't agree, I'll throw you in the river." And the other one said, "I'll never change my mind." So then that man who was bigger, the knife man, he picked up the scissors man and threw him in the river. And the man, he couldn't swim. So he was starting to drown. And the knife man said, "Look, if you agree, knife, then I will save you." So the man was going down for the third time. And he put his hand out of the water and went like this. So the moral is, stubborn people like scientists or impersonalists will never accept defeat. Even though completely smashed, they still maintain that they are right. And now, the yogi's wager. A servant of a rich man came before his master one day and told him of an interesting yogi he had seen in the river. The servant said that this yogi claimed he could stay in the water all night in the middle of the river without any outside heat. The yogi was willing to take a bet with anyone to prove that he could do it. So when the rich man heard this, he decided to bet against the yogi. So the bet was made to see whether the yogi could stay in the water all night. So we want to say that this was in the cold season in India, in North India. Generally India is a warm country, but in North India, in the winter, it does get quite chilly. So this is in the cold season. So this is, you know, quite a feat to stay in a river up to one's neck all night. So the yogi went into the water, and the rich man and his servant went home. Of course, there was always some people going by who could make sure the yogi was there in the water. And the next day, it was reported, when the rich man and his servant came back, it was reported to them that, yes, this yogi, he has successfully stayed in the water all night. So the rich man, he was thinking, all right, so this yogi won the bet. But then the rich man had one clever friend. And this clever friend said, "Wait a minute. You see that light?" And he pointed to a faraway temple. On top of the temple, there was a ghee flame burning. So this clever man claimed that this yogi, by his mystic power, he drew heat from that faraway light and brought it into his body. And that's why he can stay in the water all night. Actually, it's not that he's actually austere. It's not that he endured the cold. So then the rich man said, "Oh, yeah, that's a very good explanation. So why should I pay him?" So then he refused to pay. Now the servant, he was unhappy. So the rich man went home, followed by the servant, and the rich man said, So, my dear servant, now go to the kitchen and cook me my breakfast. So the servant went in the kitchen, and the rich man was waiting. And he was sure, now by now there should be breakfast. So he was calling, "Where's my breakfast?" And the servant came out and said, "It takes a little time, just be patient." He went back in the kitchen. And again the rich man waited. "Hey, where's my breakfast?" "Sorry, master, it takes a little more time." So he waited. Then he got very impatient. He came storming in the kitchen. "What's going on? Where's my breakfast?" And he saw that the servant had on the floor made a very small flame. And then from the ceiling he had hung a pot. And the pot was 2 meters above the little flame. And the servant was standing there like this. And the rich man said, "What are you doing?" And the servant said, "Oh, since you believed that this yogi was taking heat from that faraway fire, so I am doing the same. I'm cooking your breakfast in this way, but it's going very slowly." So then the rich man, he could understand that he had been unfair to that yogi, so he went back and paid him. So Prabhupada told this story to illustrate that we should follow the process. If we want to get the result, just like if you want to have nicely cooked breakfast, then you have to put the pot of food to be cooked directly on the flame. You can't make such kind of foolish arrangement, 2 meters separating flame from pot. You'll never get the result. So similarly, when we take to the process of bhakti yoga, chanting the holy name to get the result of love of Godhead, we have to follow the process correctly. That means you cannot chant Hare Krishna and at the same time be doing all kinds of nonsense things in between and then be wondering, "Hey, where's my love of God?" You have to follow the process as it is. Then the next story is the old lady's blessing. Now this story, I know the background of this, and that Bhakti True Maharaj and another devotee in Vrindavan, they went to see a famous temple. And at that temple, the priest, the Brahmin, Pujari, he said to them, after they'd taken darshan, that "You're such nice devotees that Krishna will surely reward you in your next life, that you can take birth in a family of brahmanas like I did." So they returned, and Bhakti True Maharaj informed Srila Prabhupada of this blessing of that brahman. So then Srila Prabhupada in reply told this story. During the time of the British Raj, there was an old lady who lived in a remote village. One day the British district magistrate, he's a district officer, legal officer, who travels around to settle legal problems that might come up in his area. So one day the British district magistrate visited her town. This old lady had been entangled in a quarrel over possession of land, which some of her relatives had been trying to take from her. Friends advised that she see the British magistrate and present the matter to him for settlement. When she did so, this magistrate immediately ruled in her favor and made sure that the land was put in her name. So the old lady was very delighted, and she blessed the British officer. She said, "I bless you that in your next life you will become a policeman." Now the reason that she blessed him to become a policeman is that in her village experience, the policeman is the most important person. So this was the highest rank she could think of. But the thing is that this officer, this magistrate, he's already so much more important than a village policeman. But the old lady couldn't understand that. So in the same way, a devotee, a Vaishnava, is already so much superior to caste brahmanas. So this blessing is like that, to bless a big district officer that he may become a policeman. The next story is called The Worthless Worshipper of Kali. You know the goddess Kali. She is very popular in India, especially in Bengal. Kali's form is dark. She's a blackish deity, and she's depicted with at least four hands, usually actually with 10. And in every hand there's a different weapon, and she has a garland of human skulls, or it's actually fresh human heads, freshly cut. And she has a long tongue and big sharp teeth. So goddess Kali is worshipped by materialistic people because she's actually the consort of Lord Shiva. So she gives very easily, like Lord Shiva does, material benedictions. And the way of worshipping goddess Kali in these temples in Bengal is animal sacrifice. They sacrifice, usually it's a goat. So an insensitive worshipper of the goddess Kali went to the temple and prayed to the goddess in a materialistic way, typical of a demigod worshipper. He asked for a material benediction. After his prayers and a little puja, he soon got his desired result. But part of the ceremony, or part of the offering that he had taken, the vow that he had taken to serve goddess Kali, was that after this result came, he is supposed to go back to the temple and sacrifice a goat. So, but he didn't come back. After some days, he happened to come into the temple just to pay obeisances to the deity. And while he was standing there in front of the deity after paying obeisances, the deity spoke to him. And she asked him, "Where's the goat? You promised some days ago that after you got what you wanted, you would come here and sacrifice a goat." So the man replied, "Oh, getting a goat, you know, that's very expensive. I don't have so much money." So then the goddess said, "All right, but you have to offer something. So you at least sacrifice a pig." So he said, "All right." Then he went away. And he didn't come back for many days. Then after some time, he returned. And again, just offered his obeisances and stood before the deity. So this time the goddess asked, "Where's the pig? You said you'd offer a pig." So the man replied, "I'm sorry, but I couldn't find a pig anywhere. It's not so easy." So the goddess replied, "This is not very good. You've received your benediction, and now you must give something in return. But just to make it easy for you, I'll request that you just offer something that is very available, that you can get without any trouble. For instance, why don't you offer me a fly?" So this lazy man, he replied, "But goddess, there's so many flies buzzing around here in the temple. What? And you have so many hands. Why don't you just reach out and grab one?" So the moral is that demigod worship does not involve any love whatsoever. This type of worship is very selfish, and one who has his own interests at heart, he approaches demigods. The next story is smoking ganja through a friend's hand. You know, ganja is the Indian word for marijuana. So Prabhupada told this story to illustrate this point, that if one has his own philosophy, then let him preach his own philosophy. But don't preach your own philosophy in the name of the Bhagavad Gita. This is our protest to all the interpreters of the Bhagavad Gita. If they do not believe in God, Krishna, and they don't want to surrender it to Him, then let them preach atheism. Everyone has got the right to do this. But why preach atheism in the name of the Gita? This is like the man who wants to smoke ganja, but he doesn't want to be caught by the police. So he sits next to a friend who's not smoking ganja, and he puts the marijuana cigarette between his fingers and smokes from his hand. Then, when the police come, they smell marijuana smoke, and the way they check, in India anyway, they look at everyone's hand. Who's been smoking ganja? Show us your fingers. And because the ganja leaves a very significant yellow mark between the fingers. So when the police do that, then they catch this friend who wasn't smoking. And they arrest him. So Srila Prabhupada gave... We mentioned the other day about this one Mayavadi, Ramana Maharishi. So Prabhupada actually told this story in that connection. That he has his own philosophy. So why does he bother to introduce Bhagavad Gita? Just preach your own philosophy and leave Gita alone. This Prabhupada said, this is like smoking marijuana through another person's hand. Then we have the story of the Himalayas give birth. Where is that? Yeah, this is a short story. Another story that Srila Prabhupada often told. When word spread that the world famous huge Himalaya mountain range was going to produce offspring, hundreds of people gathered at the foothills of the mountains. In anticipation, great crowds waited. And finally they saw in the side of the mountain a hole open up. And they were all waiting. Now it's coming. There'll be something wonderful. And out from the hole ran a whole herd of rats. They came running out. And everyone went away very disappointed. So Prabhupada told this story to illustrate that it is expected from the great universities of the world. You go to these universities, you see big buildings looking like mountains. That something wonderful will come out. But actually all that comes out is hippies and punks and rats. Dogs and cats. So Prabhupada said, unless these young people become Krishna conscious, they will be like these rat offspring of the Himalaya mountains. And now, yes, here's a story called The Cat in the Basket. When it was time for her daughter's marriage, one woman made many elaborate arrangements for a smooth wedding ceremony. However, in the middle of the proceedings, a cat ran into the middle of the whole assembly. Now, we should explain that in India, unlike the West, animals like cats and dogs are considered to be very filthy and inauspicious. People do not keep cats and dogs in their house. The cats and dogs stay outside and they just eat whatever scraps are thrown to them. The main reason for cats and dogs is the dogs will bark if someone's coming and the cat will chase away the mice and rats. But otherwise, Indian people don't make friends of these animals. They rather make friends with cows. Actually, many Indian houses, the cow is the family pet. They keep the cow in the backyard and they come and pet the cow and talk to the cow, but not to cats and dogs. So at this lady's marriage ceremony, this arrangement she made for her daughter, everything was set and the ceremony was being performed, and suddenly a cat came into the middle of everything. Now this is considered very inauspicious. So this mother, she was afraid that people would notice this cat and start to comment that, oh, the whole proceedings have been polluted. So what she did was, she looked around and she saw one basket that had been used for flowers, wicker basket. So she took that and put it over the cat, kept the cat under the basket. So some years later, that bride was grown up and she had her own family. And then her daughter came of age and a marriage had to be arranged for her. So this mother did everything like she had seen her mother do. And after everything was arranged and the marriage was just about to begin, she was looking and she was thinking, but there's something missing. There was one more thing my mother did. Oh, yes, I know what it is. So she found a cat and she put it under a basket. So the moral is that due to a poor fund of knowledge, people accept certain theories and practices as truth, but they never stop to question why those theories and practices exist. So this story criticizes the tendency to follow blindly. This next story is called The Devotee Who Kept His Tilak. There was once a factory where all the workers were Hindus, and mostly they were Vaishnavas. The Vaishnavas, therefore, had freedom to wear their Vaishnav tilak to work, and they also displayed other Vaishnav paraphernalia, like neck beads and so on. But after some time, the new proprietor was a Muslim. So on taking over the business, the Muslim owner declared that he would not allow the workers to come to work anymore wearing Vaishnav tilak. Most of the workers obeyed, and on the given date announced by the owner, they appeared at the factory without their tilak. One employee, however, thought that he would take his chances and depend on Krishna. So he went to work on that day, still wearing very clear white Vaishnav tilak. After seeing all the workers assembled together, the new Muslim proprietor said, "This one devotee who has worn Vaishnav tilak is very courageous. So he can continue to wear the tilak every day. But the rest of you are forbidden to wear it anymore." So the moral is, we should not unnecessarily abandon our Vaishnav culture. The next story is called The Nawab Chandelier. Yes, here it is. So Nawab means rich one. There used to be a class of very wealthy men in Bengal who had this title. First they were Muslims, and then later the British were also called Nawabs when they became very wealthy, plundering Bengal. So there was a Nawab who had so much money that he didn't know what to do with it. He had, so this Nawab, he had in his house a very beautiful crystal chandelier, very, very big. And the crystals were actually real quartz, real glass quartz crystal. So it was very expensive chandelier. I don't know about this one. It may be plastic. I don't know. Very often the chandeliers one sees now are just plastic. But his was... This is real. Okay, so you can look at this chandelier and think about this story. So as his servant was cleaning the crystal chandelier, one crystal fell off and it crashed onto the marble floor. And as it crashed and broke into little pieces, it made a very unusual tinkling sound. So the Nawab was sitting in the next room, and he was just sitting smoking his hookah, looking out the window. He was completely bored. And when he heard this sound, he came in. So the servant was, he was very afraid. And he was standing with folded hands, he was trembling. And the Nawab said, "What was that sound?" And the servant said, "I'm very sorry, but while cleaning the chandelier, one crystal fell and it broke. I'm very, very sorry." And the Nawab said, "That was a very interesting sound. Go up there and throw down another one." So he climbed up and he dropped another one. And the Nawab went, "I like this sound. Throw down another one." So one after the other, they were thrown down, and then the whole chandelier was finished. And the Nawab was very happy. "Today my day was interesting." So this also illustrates modern civilization. This is like that. They have so much opulence, but they waste it uselessly. Next story. This is a story Srila Prabhupada told, actually to describe himself, define his own mission. This is called the axe and the tree. Mayavadi gurus have ruined the whole world with their philosophy. But there was another Bengali who would destroy them. You see, the greatest Mayavadi gurus in recent history were all Bengalis. Ramakrishna was a Bengali. Vivekananda was a Bengali. Yogananda, Paramahansa Yogananda, who went to America in the early 50s, he was a Bengali. There's another one, Sri Chinmoy, who's very well known. He's a Bengali. So, and there are others. So the big ones, the real big Mayavadis, were all Bengalis. So Srila Prabhupada always said that Bengalis are very intelligent. So when a Bengali comes out of Bengal, especially if he comes to the West where people don't know philosophy, it's very easy for a Bengali to cheat because they're very clever. So Prabhupada said it takes another Bengali, meaning himself, to defeat such clever Bengali Mayavadis. So there was once, the story Prabhupada told to illustrate this was the story of an axe head. You know, just the metal sharp part of an axe was lying next to a tree. And the axe and the tree were talking. So this axe head said to the tree, "I will cut you down." And the tree replied, "You can't do that." And the axe said, "No, but I'm very sharp. I can cut you down." And the tree replied, "You can't do anything unless I first give you one of my branches for a handle." So the axe represents the Western world. We're being cheated by the Bengalis. The tree represents Bengal or the Bengalis. So Westerners, and this is like Prabhupada said, the Westerners, when Vivekananda came to Chicago, there was a conference, a big world religious conference in Chicago in, I think it was 1898 or something like that, 1896. And Vivekananda came there. And he stood up, because it was a religious conference, so there was all religions were there. And they were all expecting to hear different ideas about God. Then Vivekananda stood up, he had his big turban. And he was very impressive, and everyone was astonished when he came to speak. And he said, "Why you have gathered here to speak about God, how to worship God in different ways? Don't you know you are all God?" And so they were astonished. They'd never heard anyone say something like that before. So the Christians, they wanted to protest. But this Vivekananda was so clever. He was talking circles around them. They felt in their heart that this is wrong. How is it that we are all God? How can he say this is mad? They couldn't believe they'd heard this. And they wanted to protest, but he was so clever. And they couldn't defeat him. So this is the story to illustrate. The tree represents Bengal. And unless Bengal gives one of her branches to the axe, no one can cut this tree down. So Srila Prabhupada, he came from Bengal to deliver the actual Vedic philosophy of Krishna consciousness and defeat all the Mayavadis. Therefore, we praise Srila Prabhupada with that pranam mantra, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashyacha Desha Tarani. He has come to the lands where Nirvishesha Shunyavadi philosophy has spread, and he is preaching the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, the next one, yes, is another. This is also very, I find this very humorous. Long, long ago, a student took his final examination in the school. So one of the questions that he had to answer was about the reign of one Indian king whose name was Hardwar Basta. So the student could not remember anything about Hardwar Basta, but it was an essay question. So he had to, write a whole paragraph about Hardwar Basta. So What he thought he would do is just to make up big words, big sounding words, and write an essay about Hardware Basta in that way. So this is what he wrote. This, when Srila Prabhupada was telling this story, he spoke these words. Everyone was very surprised when Prabhupada was talking these words. Hardware Basta was a dobendi lactalized by the plactoni of Tinda. And he filled up a whole page like that. So the examiner, he saw, he could understand that this boy had simply manufactured words. But he thought, this also requires intelligence. So he gave him a passing mark. So the moral is that in a similar way, many books are published that are manufactured only out of nonsense. But because it takes some intelligence to juggle words in this way, people think that these books are very valuable. You see? Actually, people think like that. They have a big book, and when they open it up, they can't understand what it says. But everybody says, this is such a nice book. There's so many wise words in this book. And when anybody reads it, their mind just becomes puzzled. What does it mean? And now there's a story about sugarcane. Is it? No. We'll go on to the story about the man who wouldn't change his word. Yes, this is a story to illustrate dogmatism. You know, when one becomes dogmatic, then he sticks to some argument, even when the argument is no longer useful. He sticks to some philosophy or whatever, when it's no longer valid. And although we should always, as devotees, we must always preach from the Vedic scriptures, and the Vedic scriptures never change. But that doesn't mean that we should not adjust our preaching, as we heard before, to time, place, and circumstance. So this is a story that illustrates this point very nicely. So there was a man who was an expert. He was an expert in some certain field. And that field was very important in criminal investigation. You know, just like when there are criminal cases, they call experts on blood analysis or other such things to testify, to clarify the evidence. So there was such a man. He was always being called to the court to give his opinion. So when you're sworn in, you're always sworn to tell the truth. You see? You must tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Hold up your right hand. So when he was sworn in like that, the first time, then the first question he was asked, could you please tell us your age for the record? So he said, my age is 60 years. So then after that, year after year, whenever he was called to the court, even 10 years later, he was sworn in and then asked his age, 60 years old. So the judge, after 10 years, said, my dear sir, you've been coming to this court regularly for 10 years. And every time you say you're 60 years old, but it's now 10 years later. And the man replied, I have sworn the first day I came here that my age is 60 years old. I cannot change my word. And the next one is the deaf man. A deaf man used to call for his wife. He would be in one room, she would be in the kitchen. So he used to call, wife, please come here. And she would reply, I'm coming, just a moment. But because he was deaf, he couldn't hear that. So he used to think, this woman is deaf. I'm calling, but she doesn't come. So then when she would come, he would accuse her. What's wrong with you? You must be deaf. But the fact is that he couldn't hear. So this is similar to the mass of people who are brainwashed by material illusion and who yet accuse the Krishna conscious devotees of being brainwashed. Then, this is a good one. Once at the hermitage of a venerated Mayavadi guru, a disciple became enlightened after years of penance and instruction at his master's feet. "O master," he said, "I realize now what you have been saying all along. God and I are one. Only by the power of illusion have I been making distinction between myself and God. But now, by your kindness, I am awakened. I am in union with the formless, limitless, and ineffable Supreme." When the guru indicated that the disciple had now, because he had now understood, he should go now and make a pilgrimage, then the disciple left, and on his way, he was walking through the middle of the streets, thinking about his realizations. After some time, he heard an elephant driver shouting from the top of his elephant, "Make way for the elephant! Move out of the road!" He saw ahead of him all the people. They were running to either side of the road, and he could see a big elephant coming with the driver on his back. So the man thought, "Why should I move outside? Move out of the way for an elephant? That would be against my new realization. I am God now. The elephant should stand aside for me." So when the elephant came up to him, the man didn't move. He stood there holding his danda. So the elephant grabbed him by his nose and threw him. And he crashed into some vegetable stand. And potatoes and tomatoes went everywhere. And this man's arm was broken, and he was bruised very severely. So the next day he returned to his spiritual master's hermitage, and he was limping, he was hobbling along and holding his broken arm. And he told his spiritual master the whole story and then asked, "Oh master, just yesterday I thought that I'd completely understood your teachings, but look what happened when I applied them. How could such a misfortune happen to me? And on the very day when I realized your instructions." The master replied, "Yes, you said that you realized that God is one. So did you not hear God on top of the elephant telling you to move out of the way?" So this story demonstrates one of the severe flaws in the philosophy of monism, which states that there is absolute oneness without differentiation of all beings, including God. As the story shows, if everyone is elevated to the status of God, only calamity can result from the confusion as to who should have the right of way when a conflict of interest arises. And the next story is also very, very important. Once there was a hunter chasing a fox, and he caught it and was just about to kill it when he saw the king approaching. So this took place in the king's own preserve, his own forest preserve. So the hunter could hunt other animals, but foxes were reserved for the king only. So the king was riding up with a party of soldiers, and the hunter just had the fox in his hand. So when he saw the king, he put the fox under his coat. And then the king rode up and greeted him and said, "How are you today?" "Oh, I'm very good, your majesty." Then the king discussed the weather and other different topics. And the hunter was just standing there. He had the fox underneath his coat. And he was standing, "Yes, your majesty. Yes, oh yes, you're right. Yes." And he never even slightly acted like anything was wrong. Finally, the king left. And as soon as the king was out of sight, that hunter fell into two pieces on the ground because the fox had eaten right through the middle of his body. So the moral is that we should always reveal our minds and never keep problems to ourselves, masking them over. Otherwise, we will have severe difficulty in Krishna consciousness. It's a very nice story. And the next story is also very funny. It's called The Old Man, the Young Boy, and the Donkey. Once there was an old man and a young boy who were traveling with a donkey. The young man, the young boy, was leading the donkey, and the old man was riding on its back. When they passed through a small village, some of the townspeople yelled abuse. They called out, "Look at this old man exploiting that poor young boy. What a rascal. That old man, he's riding very comfortably on the back of the donkey, and the poor young boy, he has to walk. Very, very bad behavior." So when they passed through that village, the old man said to the young boy, "Well, I think we better swap over. Otherwise, when we come to the next village, they're going to abuse us again. So you get on the back of the donkey and I will walk." Then they came to that village, but there they were also criticized. "Look at that selfish little boy taking advantage of the old grandfather. The poor old man has to walk while this healthy, strong boy, he's sitting on the back of donkey." So when they got out of that village, then they talked again and they thought, "Well, let's both walk. Then certainly in the next village they won't criticize us." So when they came to the next village, the people said, "Look at those two stupid people. They have a donkey, but they walk." Then the old man concluded, "Actually, it doesn't matter what you do. People will always criticize." That's a fact. Oh, this is it. I didn't write this down to read, but I like this story. This also illustrates an important point in Krishna consciousness. There were two sadhus who were walking on the road. They came to a river which was so deep, and there was no bridge and no boat to cross the river. So just as they were ready to wade through the water to get to the other side, a pregnant woman came up and asked them, "Please, sadhus, could you help me get across to the other side? Please carry me, because I am very heavy with child and not strong, and if I enter that water, something bad may happen to me." So one sadhu looked at the other, and his friend said, "Oh, don't do it. We are sadhus. What do we have to do with women?" The other sadhu said, "That's right, but this poor lady is pregnant." "Pregnant or not, it is no business of ours." So then the other sadhu, who felt very compassionate, he said, "Anyway, I will help her." The other one said, "Well, if you want to be in Maya, then I won't stop you." So that sadhu, he carried the lady on his shoulders across the river. And when they got to the other side, he put her down, and they went their separate ways. So for about 2 miles, the two sadhus continued walking, but they were not talking. Then finally, that other sadhu, he couldn't contain himself anymore. He said, "It was very bad that you carried that lady across the river on your shoulder. Very bad." And the other sadhu replied, "Look, I only carried her across the river, but you're still carrying her in your mind. Why don't you drop her? We've already gone 2 miles. I forgot her when I put her down. But all this time we've been walking, you've just been thinking, lady, lady, lady." The next one is called The Logical Bull. There was a logician who went to purchase some flour from a miller. The miller asked him to kindly wait for a few moments because he was just grinding it. So the logician noticed that the miller had an ox for turning the millstone. That ox would walk in a circle, and it was connected to the stone, and thus the grains would be ground. And on the neck of the ox, there was a big bell. As the ox walked along, the bell would ring. So the miller, in the meantime, while this ox was walking, he went into the house. Then he returned and gathered some fresh ground flour into a sack and gave it to the logician. "I have one question for you," asked the logician. "A question for me?" the miller replied. "I'm simply a farmer. What do I know of your scholarly questions?" "No, no, this is a question about your line of work. Tell me, why do you keep this bell on the neck of the ox?" And the miller replied, "Oh, you see, that way I can do other things. When that ox walks, turning the stone, in my house, I can hear the bell. If I hear no bell, I come out and take this stick and give him a whack and get him walking again. Otherwise, if I just had to stay here and watch if he was walking or not, then so much other responsibilities would not be accomplished." So then the logician, he asked, "But what if that ox would just stand still and shake his neck like this and ring the bell?" The farmer replied, "Oh, that's no problem, because he's a bull. He's not a logician like you." So the moral is, too much intelligence is dangerous sometimes, because it can be used for thinking, how can I avoid work, or how can I avoid to surrender to Krishna, like that. Here's a story called The Brahmin Who Knew Many Languages. There was one learned Brahmana who knew so many languages. So he came to a king's court, and he spoke in so many languages, and everyone was so impressed. And then he made a challenge. He said, "You try to find out what my own original language is." Because he was speaking so many languages so expertly, without any accent, any trace of accent, speaking so many languages, just like a native. So he said, "This is my challenge to you, you know, to the pundits of this king's court. Find out which language is my original language." So all the pundits, they were perplexed. They had heard him speaking, and they said to the king, "There's no way. He's so expert in language. Who can know?" But the king had one joker, you know, a jester who just gives the king amusement. And this joker stepped up and said, "I will find out what his real language is." So the king said to him, "If you find out, I'll give you 1,000 gold coins." The joker said, "Yes, I'll do it." So that evening, this great pundit, who knew many languages, he was walking through the royal garden. So the joker, he crept into the garden, and he covered himself with a big blanket and climbed up into a tree. And when the pundit walked by the tree, the joker jumped out of the tree and went, "Woo!" and landed on the pundit. And the pundit, in great fear, he said in his own language, "Oh my God!" So the joker, in this way, he found out his real language. So the moral of the story is that philosophers may speak so much high philosophy, but when they get emotional or angry, then you can actually see the real motive, the real thought process behind all their big words. Just like I can remember, Hridayananda Maharaj was having a debate with one big Mayavadi. He was not actually such an important person, but he was posing himself to be a big college professor in America who had been for some time a Mayavadi sannyasi in India, but then gave up sannyas and just taught school. But this Mayavadi, he was very critical of Srila Prabhupada's books and the Hare Krishna movement. So a debate was arranged. And this Mayavadi philosopher would speak big words, quoting Upanishads and so on and so forth. And he was trying to say that, and always trying to argue that God is the impersonal absolute. And, Krishna is just an avatar of the impersonal absolute. So when Hridayananda Maharaj was speaking at one point, he was talking about chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. He was saying something about the holy name of Krishna. And so he was saying, at one point, he was saying, Krishna, Krishna. And this big Mayavadi who was sitting by, he couldn't restrain himself. And he went to the microphone and said, Shiva, Shiva! So he lost his cool and everyone was looking, what? Now this is a good story. Sometimes devotees, they find themselves in some situation which they think is hopeless. They're struggling, and they seem to make no progress. And then they start to think, oh, what is the use? And then they wonder if they should just give everything up. You see, give up Krishna consciousness, go back home to mama. What's the use? So after struggling to keep afloat for some time, one frog gave up hope. Oh, it's useless. And just drowned in the milk and was dead. But the other frog was more determined, and he kept kicking, despite the hopeless situation. Now, by doing all this kicking, again and again and again, because this was fresh milk, just came from the cow, the milk turned to butter. And then the frog could stand on the hard butter and jump out. So the moral is that we should always be determined in our efforts to serve Krishna and never give up. Even if it seems hopeless, just keep kicking. And this is another nice story. The boy who would not give up sweets. A woman brought her child to see a saintly person. She told the sadhu, "The doctor informs me that my child is a diabetic and he must stop eating all kinds of sugary sweets. But in spite of what I tell him, he won't stop. Since you are a saintly person, I am sure that if you tell him to stop eating sugar and sweets, he will listen and his life can be saved." So, surprisingly to that woman, the sadhu replied that he could not tell the child to stop eating sweets on that day. He said, "Bring the child back after 4 days." So the mother was a little disturbed by this. Why, he can't tell my child right now? No, 4 more days my child will eat sweets. This is not good. But anyway, she thought, he's a saintly person, so I should do what he said. But she was really disturbed in her mind about this. So then after four days, she brought her child back. And then the child sat in front of the sadhu, and the sadhu said to him in a very grave voice, very seriously, "Now, you must stop eating sweets." And the child was very profoundly affected by these words, and he bowed down at the sadhu's feet and said, "Yes, I promise from this day on I will never eat sweets again. This is my promise to you." So then the mother was very surprised. And she asked, "Please, Swamiji, tell me, why is it that 4 days ago you would not tell my child this, and now today when I brought the child, you are so speaking with such determination, so seriously, that it has completely changed my child's heart?" So the sadhu replied, "Well, you see, on that day you came, 4 days ago, I myself was eating sweets. So therefore, I had to give up the sweets myself. Now I can tell this child with complete seriousness and no hypocrisy, don't eat sweets, and it has effect." So moral, example is better than precept. Precept means principles, speaking principles. But to set the example of those principles is more important. A leader cannot tell the public to stop smoking, for instance, if he himself smokes. He should practice himself first, then he becomes acharya. Ah. There was once a hunter who wanted to practice his shooting. So he took some birds and released them. The birds flew away and all of them were shot. But one bird was very cunning. And instead of flying away, he placed himself down at the feet of the hunter. Being so situated, the hunter could not shoot the bird without harming his own feet. So the moral is, instead of flying away from Krishna and being shot down by Maya, we should take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, and then Maya cannot touch us. Oh, this is a very good story. Sometimes devotees, they're maintaining wrong desires in their heart, and they're serving superior devotees, serving their spiritual master. At the same time, they're keeping these wrong desires in their heart. So actually, that's very dangerous, and we will see why. There was once a man chopping wood in the forest. He was splitting the wood, stacking it in piles. It's very exhausting work, he thought. So he sat down under one particularly very nice tree. This tree looked very attractive. It was giving such nice shade. So he sat down beneath it and he was cooling off. And then he thought to himself as he was sitting there, I just wish all this wood that I need to chop today would just be chopped by itself. So suddenly his axe jumped up and went to all the trees and very quickly chopped all the wood, split it, and all the wood piled up into very nice stacks. And he was surprised. And then he looked again at the tree he was sitting under, and he realized, this is a kalpa vriksha tree. This is a tree that fulfills all desires. So then he began to think to himself, what do I want? I know, I want a beautiful woman. So poof, there was a beautiful woman. And now I want a beautiful place to live in. And I want very many nice servants. And I want an opulent feast. And I want money. And so this way he went on and on and on. And everything he was thinking about, it all appeared there. And he was so happy. Oh, I have everything. So then he was still sitting under the tree as it got very dark. Then he thought, he was looking as the sun went down. He thought, it's getting dark now. Now this is in the jungle. So if one stays out here in the dark, then I know what can happen. A tiger will jump out and eat one. So just at that moment, a big tiger came out and jumped on him and ate him. So the moral is, when we bow down to the Vaishnavas, we pray, Vanchakalpa Dhruvishtra. We address the devotees as desire trees. And that's a fact. Every devotee is a desire tree. And we're associating with devotees all around us. So we have to be very careful about what we desire. Because if we desire material things, then these desires may actually be fulfilled, or they may increase more and more in our heart and become very, very troublesome to our advancement. So since we're in the association of devotees who are like desire trees, we should desire to advance in devotional service, and that desire will come true. Now, we shall read the story of... this is a very nice story. Everyone here knows the story of Ajamil and how he was saved from the Yamadutas when he chanted the holy name. Now this is a very similar story, but it is even showing Hare Krishna, Shri Radha Gopinath Ki Jai. It is even showing greater mercy. In the Puranas, there is a story of an old man who was addicted to sinful activity. He was a very cruel person. But when he was on his deathbed, at the last minute, he had a change of heart. He said, well, why not try it now? All my life, I've seen these Vaishnavas chanting Hare Krishna. I'm going to die anyway, so I might as well try it now. So he called his servant and told him, go to the marketplace and purchase some of those japa mala beads. And the servant was very surprised. You want japa mala? What are you going to do with him? Because all the servant had ever seen that this man was interested in sense gratification, and he was always criticizing the saintly person, so he was very surprised. So what do you want Japamala for? The old man said, I'm going to chant Hare Krishna. At least I'll give it a try. So the servant went to the marketplace, and he was looking around, and he finally found a place where he could buy Japamala, and then he argued about the price, and finally got some nice Japamala for a cheap price, and he came back to the house and found the old man had died. The old man was already dead. He had died while the servant was in the marketplace. So at that time, the Yamadutas came, and they were, just like with the story of Ajamil, they had their rope, and they were just going to rope the old man's subtle body, when suddenly the Vishnudutas appeared. And the Yamadutas said, now, we remember the last time with Ajamil when you came. But you must understand, this man, he was so sinful and he did not chant the holy name. So now we will take him. And the Vishnudutas said, no. We have come to take this man back to Godhead simply because he had a desire to chant Hare Krishna. So how strong the holy name is. Now the next story, Srila Prabhupada told at one meeting, it's a short story. There was once a man who was due to get a heart transplant. So just before the operation, he was advised that there were three hearts available. So he could choose a general's heart, a businessman's heart, or a banker's heart. So he said, I want the banker's heart. And the doctor asked, why you want the banker's heart? And the man said, I'm quite sure it has never been used. So the next story. Oh yes, this is a nice story too. There's a story of a beggar who came to the house of a king. The king was looking from his window and he heard this knock on his door. So he sent the servant, go see who it is. The servant went down there and he opened the door. Who is it? The king asked. It's just some beggar, the servant called up. He wants some food or something. So the king said, all right, let's have a laugh. Call him in here. So the servant brought the beggar upstairs to the king's big room. And the king said, all right, beggar, what do you want? The man very meekly asked, I just want some prasad, a little food or something. So the king said to a servant, whispered in his ear, just pretend to bring him some food. So then the servant set the beggar down, and the servant pretended to bring out a big tray of foodstuff. He was holding his hand like this and setting it down and taking the cover off. And the king said, just see, you have a very nice plate there, nice rasgulla, samosa, kachori. Fill yourself up, be happy. So then just to humor the king, because he didn't want to offend him, this poor beggar, he acted like he was eating. He reached and he was going like this. So then the king asked, is it good? The beggar replied, oh yes, it's very good. I especially like the samosas. Then the king said, so what else would you like? And the beggar said, well, a nice wife. And the king said, all right, bring on the dancing girls. So then the servant pretended to bring in some dancing girls. And they were sitting down and as if they were watching the dancing. And then the king, he turned to the beggar and said, aren't they dancing nicely? And the beggar said, yes, yes, very nicely. And the king said, which one do you want for your wife? And the beggar said, the sixth one. And the king replied, ha, there's only five. but you can take the fifth one. So then they arranged a whole invisible marriage ceremony. And then the king said, now I'll give you a palace. You can move into a palace with her. You just go out the door, down the road, you'll see so many big palaces. So the beggar went out the door, down the road. Of course, there was nothing. So, but this man, this beggar was very humble. And he said, yes, your honor. Yes, sir, my lord. Thank you very much. And he went out the gate and was going down the road. And suddenly the heart of the king, he was touched by this man's submissive nature. He thought, actually, I was really trying to make a fool out of him. I was really trying to insult him. But he's so good-natured that he played along. Any other person would have gotten angry. What are you doing? Why are you insulting me like this? But he was very submissive. He's a very nice person. So then he suddenly sent the servant. Go bring him back. And when he came back, the king said to him, I'm very pleased with your attitude. You've gone along with this joke I was making. So now, bring out the real prasad. So they brought out real prasada. Now take yourself a real wife and have a real palace. So the moral is, in this way, just by his humble nature, and just by humoring and cooperating with the king, he was blessed with so much opulence. Once there was a judge who was overseeing one court case, Hare Krishna. So the prosecutor, the state prosecutor, he was making his arguments, big, long-winded arguments. And then the defense lawyer, he came forward and he presented his side, and back and forth, they were arguing. So after the judge heard the initial description of the case, then he lost interest in the whole thing. And he was sitting on the bench. He was just sleeping. His head was down. I guess he was sleeping. And these two lawyers, they were arguing back and forth. So the court clerk, he saw that the judge was dozing, so he thought, I better do something. So he walked up to the judge and gave him a little, poke. He said, Your Honor, you're dozing off. You're not being attentive to this case. The judge turned and said to the man, it's all right. I've already decided. They can say what they want, but I know what my ruling will be. And then he went back to sleep. So the moral is that the defense and the prosecution could say what they want, but as far as the judge was concerned, the case was already decided. So in the same way, Yamaraj has already decided what will happen to you after you die. No one can manipulate your karma. In other words, no amount of arguments, no amount of pleading, but I meant to do better, is going to change Yamaraj's verdict. The man who tried to cheat Yamaraj. There's a popular story from India of a man who tried to cheat Yamaraj. He consulted an astrologer and found out the exact day that he was going to die. So this man, he was a sculptor. So he knew how to work with clay very cleverly and very expertly. So he made 9 clay images of himself. He painted them and dressed them expertly. So they all looked exactly like him. And the moment that he was supposed to die by that astrological calculation, he stood in between these 9 statues of himself. So Yamaraj came, and he became confused. He saw 10 persons looking the same, all standing in a frozen posture like this. So Yamaraj was puzzled. He was looking, and he was thinking, this man may be the first one to actually cheat death. He's so expert. But then Yamaraj, because he's Mahajan, he's very intelligent, then he had a plan. So he, after looking at all these 10 forms very carefully, then Then he said, actually, whoever made these statues did a really lousy job. It's bad work. I've seen much better sculptures than this. This shows very poor taste. Look, wow, so distorted. So the sculptor, because he was an artist and very attached, he couldn't stand this. And then he stepped forward and said, what do you mean? These are very good statues. I am expert. So Yamaraj said, all right, come on. Let's go. Yes. The next one is called Gopal Goes to the Heavenly Planets. Now, Gopal is a famous joker who was in the king of in the court of a king Krishnachandra. He was considered a very controversial person because he was always making jokes, making trouble. So some of King Krishnachandra's ministers wanted to get rid of Gopal, as he was just too cunning, too clever. So they devised a plan. They employed the local barber, as the barber's shop is a place of gossip. And this barber was also the personal barber of the king. He would come to the palace to cut the king's hair. So the king would go to the barber shop and get his hair cut there. So when the king came to the barber asked him, so king, how are your relatives doing in the heavenly planets? He means the relatives who have left the world. And the king replied, well, I don't know. So the barber said, you should send someone up to the heavenly planets to find out. Well, that's a good idea, the king thought. But, the barber continued, it should be someone very confidential and close to you, like your Gopal, for instance. Yes, that's a very brilliant idea. Gopal should go to the heavenly planets and find out how my relatives are faring. So the king went back and he consulted with these ministers who all wanted to get rid of Gopal. What is the best way to arrange for someone to go to the heavenly planets? And the minister said, yes, we know. The Shastric way is that this person must be burned in fire. If he's placed within a sacrificial fire, then he'll be carried up to the heavenly planets. So then the king called for Gopal and said, Gopal, it's time we sent someone up to the heavenly planets to check on my relatives. And my ministers tell me that the way that this can be done is that you have to be burned up in sacrificial fire. So Gopal, he's very clever. So he said, of course, Your Majesty. Yes, I'll be very happy to do this. So what he did was, he went that night, because the fire was to be made the next day. So he went that night to the Yagyashala, the sacrificial arena. And he built a trap door in the place where the fire would be made. And so then the next day he came and there were Brahmins and the fire was made. And he stepped in the middle of the fire, but he activated the trap door and just dropped between the flames. And he escaped through the trap door and crawled through a tunnel to his house. And he stayed there. And he stayed there for 6 months. So the king was always wondering, when will Gopal come back with news? Meanwhile, the ministers were thinking, ha, we got rid of the guy. He burned up in the fire. But after 6 months, Gopal walked into the king's courtroom. All the ministers were astonished. Gopal, you're back, the king said joyfully. How is everyone in heaven? They're all very well, Maharaj, Gopal said, except for one small thing. Oh, what was that? Well, you see, Your Majesty, your relatives, they haven't had a haircut the whole time they were up there. They said they need to have a barber to be sent up to heaven. So you know what that meant. That meant that that barber who told this to the king would be put in the fire and sent to heaven. Uh, Now there's a story about the Gurkhas. The Gurkhas are men from the country of Nepal, which is a Himalayan country. And they're very solid soldiers. They're very brave fighters. So for 100 years or so, the British Army always has a division or several divisions of these Gurkhas. They hire them specially because they're very capable in warfare, and they're always used as commandos, frontline fighters. So in one war, I believe the Second World War, the British general, he called an assembly of the one division of Gurkhas. And he said, "We have a very dangerous mission ahead of us. We need volunteers. What we're going to do is fly you in behind enemy lines in an airplane that's flying only at 200 meters above the earth. And you have to jump from this airplane behind enemy lines. It's very dangerous. So how many volunteer?" So knowing the Gurkhas, the general expected they would all volunteer. But on this day, only half of them stepped forward, and the other half refused to step forward. So the general was very concerned. And he said, "All right." And then he said to those men who didn't step forward, "Now, I've never seen this type of behavior before from the Gurkhas. Why are you reluctant to accept this mission?" And so one of the Gurkhas who didn't step forward, he said, "Well, I don't think that I can survive a fall of 200 meters from the airplane. I mean, what will be the use? I jump from the airplane and be dead, and then I can't fight." And then the general said, "No, no, you'll have parachute." And then they said, "Oh, all right." And then they all stepped forward. So then after that, the general had great faith in the Gurkhas because he could see that 50% of the division was ready to jump from an airplane without parachute. This is a modern story called "The Man Who Lost His Hat." A man in California was driving to his wedding when suddenly his hat blew off onto the highway. Tucked into the brim of the hat was a $100 bill. So in the middle of traffic, that man tried to break his car and jump out to rescue his hat. But just behind him, there was a highway patrol police car. And the officer, he spoke over the loudspeaker and told the man, "Stay in your car, keep moving." So the man obeyed. But at the next exit, he turned off to a roadside motel, parked his car, and he ran out of the car, jumped a fence, and ran across the highway through 4 lanes of traffic and picked up his hat. So mission accomplished, he ran back into the traffic to go back to his car. So one car was coming, and he very expertly dodged it, but he didn't see another car was coming, which killed him. So the moral is, in human life, we're meant to move straight on the road back home, back to Godhead. But Maya illusion is always trying to divert us. She grabs us by our senses and she pulls us. She gets us thinking about something other than Krishna, and we get stuck on that. And then it's like when a fish bites the hook. Then once we're stuck on this thought, then Maya can just pull us in, pull us right off the path of devotional service. Then the next story is called "Every Man is Too Attached." It's a funny story. Just have to find it here. Yes. So the great Emperor Akbar was touring through his kingdom with his minister Birbal. So in one place, they saw a husband and wife were arguing. At one point, the wife, who was a very small lady, she slapped her husband's face, who was very big-bodied. And the husband just tolerated it. while the wife began to shout all kinds of chastisements at him. And he was just listening with his head down. So Akbar, he turned to his minister and said, "Why does he just stand there and take such abuse from his wife?" And Birbal replied, "That is because, you see, these men in your kingdom, they're just too much attached to their wives. They're very weak." So Akbar said, "I don't believe it." And Birbal, he replied, "Yes, it's true, and I can prove it. You just let me call for all the married men in the whole country. Let's have them gathered at one place, and then we will see." So all the married men came to one big open area. And Birbal, the king was standing by while Birbal addressed them. "My dear fellows, the great emperor Akbar wants to know, how many of you follow the commands of your wives? All those who obey their wives' instructions should now move to that side of the field." So immediately there was a huge exodus of men. They all went to the other side of the field. There was only one man left standing on this side. And Emperor Akbar, he was very happy. He felt very relieved. And he said, "At least there's one man who does not obey his wife like a fool." So then Birbal, he asked that man, "When I called for all those others who obey the command of their wife to go to that side of the field, why did you not move?" The man replied, "Because my wife told me to stay away from crowds." So here's the last story. This is again about Akbar and Birbal. Akbar had one Hindu minister. His name was Mahesh Das. But because he was serving the Muslim king, he had changed his name to Birbal. So the stories of Akbar and Birbal are very famous in India. There was one nice story about envious nature. Birbal was very clever. All the other ministers were Muslim. Birbal was the only Hindu. So these Muslim ministers, they were very envious of him. They wanted that this Hindu minister would be sacked, be kicked out of his position. So they wondered how to get rid of him. Without Birbal, Akbar would not be able to run the kingdom. So that's because the king, he was very attached to Birbal. He was always thinking, "I must have Birbal always by my side." So Akbar and Birbal were always together. And that's why these Muslim ministers were very, very envious. So we have to do something. We have to force this Birbal to quit. If we approach one of Akbar's wives, then she may be able to find out some way that we can force him to quit. So one of the queens of Akbar had a brother whose name was Hussein Shah. He was a complete fool. Everybody knew he was a fool. But they thought, if we go to the queen and praise her brother, she may do something to help us. Because the idea is, because when you go to a lady and praise her brother, then that will make her happy. So they approached the queen. "Your brother Hussein Shah is very intelligent. We feel sorry for him. We request you to convince Akbar that he should be the minister, not Birbal. He is unnecessarily carrying this Hindu on his head." The queen felt very happy. "Yes, my brother is very intelligent." Although actually he was a big fool. The queen got puffed up by all this praise, and their plan was working. The Muslim ministers were very happy. They said, "We will definitely back your brother. He should replace Birbal." "Leave it to me," the queen said. "I'll work out some scheme. Tomorrow Birbal will be sacked." So in the evening, Akbar came and entered the queen's quarters. And this particular queen, he approached her, but she wouldn't talk to him. He came to say something and she just turned away, ignored him completely. He went to the other side and she turned that side. So finally he stood in front of her and said, "What's the matter?" And she said, "I don't want to talk to you." And he became a little desperate. "Come on, what's the matter? Please tell me. Whatever it is, whatever you want, I'll do it." "No, you won't." And this way it carried on. Finally, after he was practically had his head on her feet, "Please, tell me. And then she replied, "It's my brother, Hussein Shah. What's the matter with your brother?" She replied, "He's so very intelligent." Akbar said, "Queen, with all due respect, I must tell you that he's a complete fool." So then she became very angry again. And again, she wouldn't talk to him. Just turning away. And then he was kept pleading. Then finally, he said, all right. Your brother is very clever. Yes. And then she said, "Now that you know my brother is very clever, and you should know that all your ministers also tell me that he's so clever that he should be the chief minister." And then the Akbar, he said, "Well, you know, with all due respect to you and your brother, I must tell you that without my chief minister, Birbal, I'll not be able to run this kingdom. He's the cleverest minister. There's no one, even those other ministers, they cannot hold a candle to him. What to speak of your brother?" Then the queen replied, No, you've already admitted that my brother is the cleverest of all. So that means he's cleverer than Birbal. So therefore he should be the chief minister." And he replied, "I tell you that your brother is not so clever as Birbal. No, you don't understand. Listen to me," and so on. Finally, the king surrendered. "All right, but I just can't go tomorrow to the court and tell Birbal that he's sacked. There has to be some good reason. You do as I tell you, and you will find out the reason," the queen said. "Tomorrow, you go to the court and you call Birbal and tell him that you are going to the vegetable market to buy vegetables." "Queen, you're mad. There's so many important things to be done. Why should Birbal and I go to the market? There's so many servants that we can send." No, you just do as I tell you." "All right, I will." "So then what is to happen?" "While going to the vegetable market, you stop halfway. And then you tell Birbal to call me, because you want me to be with you. But I will not come. When he returns, you say, 'Simple job, you can't do it. Just getting the queen from the palace. How are you going to run the kingdom?' And then you sack him." The king asked, "Are you positive that you won't come? Otherwise the whole thing will go wrong." No, I am definitely not coming," she assured. So then they put this plan into practice. Akbar, the next day in the court, he said to Birbal, "Birbal, we have to go to the market to buy vegetables." Birbal said, "King, what's the matter? There's so many important things we have to do." "No, we have to go." So immediately Birbal thought, something fishy is going on here. And he knew that these other ministers are very, very envious. So he said to one confidant, one close friend, that "you follow myself and the king, but no one should see that you're following." So they went, and in the middle of the road, on the way to the market, Akbar stopped and said, "Oh, by the way, you have to go back, Birbal, to the palace and fetch my queen. She has to come with us." "All right," Birbal said. So now Birbal knew that it had something to do with the queen. He didn't know what it was, but again, he stopped and told his friend to follow him, and he went to the palace. So he went into the queen's quarters, and the queen was sitting there. And then he said, "Queen, Akbar is standing in the middle of the road waiting for you. We don't have much time, so please get ready and come. He wants you to go there." And she said, "I'm not coming." So then Birbal could understand. So he said to her, "No, queen, don't do that. I will be in difficulty." And then he could see how the queen was becoming jubilant. And she said, No, I'm not coming. "But you must come, because Akbar is waiting on the way." No, I'm not coming. You can just go tell him I'm very busy." "All right," Birbal said. In the meantime, he called for his friend. And he made some sign, and the friend came in. The friend said he had a message from the king. There was no message. It was just this sudden plan of Birbal. He said, "But I can't give you this message loudly, because it's only for you. The queen should not hear." So Birbal was standing in the room. The friend came close to him and started whispering into his ear. And he was just in the ear. He just was going, "Psst, psst, psst, beautiful, psst, 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 very, very beautiful, psst, psst, psst." So the queen could hear. All she could hear was the words, "Beautiful, very beautiful, very young. So Birbal looked at the queen and said, "It's all right, queen, you don't have to come." And then he turned and walked off. The queen was now very suspicious, and she thought, "A minute ago, this fellow was very strong to invite me. And after he got this message, he just turns and goes away and says, I don't have to come. All I could hear was very young and beautiful. What does this mean? This must mean that there is a beautiful girl there meeting with Akbar, and that's why he doesn't want me to come now? What is this? I am going." So Akbar was going down the road, and the queen was running up behind him. "Wait, wait, wait, I'm coming with you." So then when Birbal arrived with Akbar, the queen was there. And Akbar said, "So, Birbal, you remain my minister. You've brought the queen." So Srila Prabhupada ki jai.